All right, welcome to the end of week 10. So recall that we've dived recently into XHTML, cascading style sheets, as well as most recently PHP. Today we will continue to look at the latter and also introduce yet one other, but one final language, that known as SQL, a standard query language with which we'll be able to connect by the end of today to a database. So it turns out, recall that we spent a while toward the end of last lecture making fake Google. The point of which was, one, to whip up a web page pretty quickly, but two, was also to demonstrate that we can already begin making web pages that take input from the user and then pass that input along to some program. Now, we kind of cheated in that case because we just passed that input to Google rather than processing it ourselves, but a student actually came up to me afterward pointing out that our efforts were actually largely for naught, since it turns out that I could have just pimped my search by visiting this old website here. And if we really wanted fake Google, it turns out all it takes is to type the name of the website you'd like to make, click a button there, and now we have fake Google, which if we now want to search for computers, in fact, searches for computers. So there you have it, been one-upped by pimpyoursearch.com, if you'd like to check that out. And one other excuse, if you will, so you'll recall that I dropped the ball in the last couple minutes there, and I was trying desperately to get that website to work, just Hello World wasn't so much as working, and we tried all those various arcane commands. Turns out that I just forgot to run a script of our own. We wrote this script called CS50 Webify, which is something that Problem Set 7 will introduce you to in its spec. But long story short, that command configures your FAS account to actually work with PHPs, because out of the box, FAS does not support PHP, so CS50 has gone ahead and created an environment in which it will work. And I forgot to run that on CS50 Studs account. So that's my disclaimer. Figured it out literally 20 seconds after class ended, but I know that's meaningless, since the camera was already off. So what's on the agenda for today first? Well, let me bring us over to the following. Let me pull up that CS50 Studs web directory again. By default, his homepage is currently just CS50 Stud. By default, his webpage is that hideous thing that we made the other day, but we actually have a couple of other things that we can show you here. So I whipped up this file, not called index.html, but this time called froshims.html. You'll recall one of the backstories I presented is that when I was a sophomore, I think, I wanted to whip up a program with which freshmen could register for intramural sports, and thereby supplanting this age-old system of writing your name on a piece of paper, sliding it through some random proctor's mail slot in Wigglesworth, and then they manually compiled everything. Well, the first thing I needed to do then was, one, make sure I knew HTML, and I kind of sort of knew it well enough. I taught myself a bit of Perl, which is similar to PHP, but actually not nearly as well suited for web development, but that was the language in vogue at the time. And what I went ahead and did was whipped up, among other things, a page that looks like this. So even though there's a bunch of XHTML here, we've at least seen all of these tags, if briefly, before. So notice, it's perhaps easiest to explain this thing in the context of the browser. I'm going to go ahead to go to froshims.html, and this is a pretty simple page. But it's demonstrative of what you can do with various form inputs, so to speak. So with fake Google, all we used was one of those input type equals text field, which just lets the user type a string of text. Well, you know from just having used the web that there are other features of forms. You can check little checkboxes. You can click those so-called radio buttons, which are the circles, and you can choose options from a drop-down. So what better way to demonstrate these four things than by whipping up an example that asks for one of each of these very basic form types. So this is similar in spirit to the web page I made for FroshIMs. Needless to say, it was even far uglier than this at the time, having not done any of this before. But if a freshman wanted to register, he might type his name and say, yeah, I'm going to be a captain of this team, gender is male. And this time I went ahead and generated the list of all the freshman dorms, and that kid was in Matthews, and then he might go ahead and click register. Now in the case of fake Google, clicking that button actually sent all that form input, the text field, to Google. But now we want to take things up a notch, and we want to submit this data back to a program that we ourselves have written. So notice that in the source code of this file, recall that we used this on Wednesday, this form element, this form tag, the action attribute, recall, specifies where the data is going to get sent to, where it's going to get submitted to. And notice that I've chosen this time not to send it to google.com, but to a file that's apparently called register.php, which is, needless to say, a program I'm going to or already wrote in PHP that's just running in the current directory, right? I haven't specified a path, which means it's in the same directory as froshims.html. And it turns out that even though I think the other day we used method equals quote unquote get for Google, well, the other convention for submitting data to a website is via this method called post. So long story short, when you submit information to a website via get, all that information ends up getting passed to the website. How? If you recall what happened with Google. When you click submit on Google, you can actually see, so in the URL, recall that we looked briefly at the URL for Google, and there was a question mark in there, and then there were a couple of those parameter value pairs, something equals something, ampersand, something equals something, ampersand. And the reason that things got formatted like that was because we were using HTTP's get for convention. Now, by that convention doesn't work so well, though, when you're trying to submit other kinds of information, particularly a lot of it. Consider, after all, when you use, say, Facebook to upload photos or any site where you actually upload a good amount of information. It's hard to imagine taking a 1, 2, 3 megabyte JPEG, a photograph, and uploading it to Facebook.com via question mark photo equals then 3 million bits, right? That doesn't seem to be such a good idea in terms of URLs. So an alternative to get is this notion of post. The function, the net effect of which is largely the same. The data gets submitted to Google or gets submitted to Facebook, but it doesn't go in the URL. It goes behind the scenes, so to speak, in one of those in multiple TCP/IP packets, and it still happens. It still gets to the destination, but not so obviously in the URL. So in fact, when you log into websites, whether it's Gmail or Facebook or any other authentication-based website, turns out for logins they typically use post instead of get. For what reason do you think? So security. It's not such a wise idea if you're storing in the URL someone's username and, worse, password, especially when you all know these days that you leave a trail whenever you use a browser. The history maintains a list usually of all the places you've been, and so the implication, if Facebook were just using get to submit usernames and passwords, is that you could go sit down at a lab computer, probably click the history button, and see everyone's username and passwords for the past few minutes. So post at least hides that information, but still gets it across the wire to the destination. Well, what's this destination going to be? Well, if I've not actually implemented register.php, well, nothing's going to happen when I click submit. But it turns out that if you do put something there, something pretty simple, take a look at this. Let me go ahead. So what we have here is register.php. And I've scrolled down to the bottom to show that most of this file is actually just XHTML. Right, because with PHP, because this is very much a web-tailored language, you typically do a lot of embedding of HTML and CSS and PHP and eventually SQL all in the same file. So notice that ultimately it looks like this register.php file is going to create a page that looks like what? Okay. Okay, and actually, let me pick up on the last part. So clearly, even though none of us in this room are experts just yet in XHTML, it looks like there's going to be a web page there, the body of which quite simply says, you are registered. Well, not actually, since I'm going to cut a few corners here. But at what how do we get to that point in this file? Well, notice the following. So on Wednesday, we used PHP to create that spell checker. And I whipped it up, granted, in advance, and it was a pretty long file. But you might recall, if you looked closely at the printout or at the code we were showing above, that not only was it required that I put a line like this at the top of the file, the purpose again of which was to tell the computer what program to use to interpret this code, because I didn't compile it with something like GCC. It rather, because it's an interpreted language, needs to be interpreted by an interpreter. That is the path of a so-called interpreter that we CS50 installed on FAS so that you guys could use it and thus run PHPs in your account. Well, also, A detail worth noting is that by convention with PHP, any actual PHP code you write, you need to flank with open bracket question mark and then end with question mark close bracket. Or if you look in some online examples, sometimes people were even more specific and they put the same two characters, open bracket question mark, then explicitly PHP. Depends on the machine's configuration. So what's this doing? Well, because you're allowed with PHP to intermingle XHTML and PHP and other stuff, well, you gotta make clear to the interpreter what's what. And the means by which you do that, quite simply, is to say with these kinds of characters, here comes some PHP. Okay, that's it for PHP. And so what PHP, what the interpreter assumes is that anything that's not inside of open bracket question mark and question mark close bracket is that that's just raw data, like XHTML that should just be spit out verbatim. Just spit it out. All right, so what does this mean? Well, it means that at the top of this file, register.php, I've actually put some actual PHP code, some programming logic. Not markup, but programming logic, much like C. And even though some of the syntax here is still pretty new, and it looks like we have some new variables here, it turns out that it is really easy to get access to information that users have submitted when clicking a submit button, because all of that information automagically, we'll say, gets tucked inside of a global variable called $_request. And what that means is that tucked inside of that array, or that variable, which by this syntax recall is actually an associative array, aka a hash table, what this means is that if I check the value of $_request, open bracket, quote unquote name, close bracket, this quite simply is going to be storing the value of whatever the freshman just typed into the name field of that web page. Similarly, this variable, $_requestGender, is going to store the value of the checkbox, which is either going to be on or off, or just completely null. And finally, $_requestDorm is going to store the name of this student's dorm. So what I'm doing with those three lines of code then appears to be what? Even though some of the syntax is new, conceptually it looks just like it's much like C. What are those three lines doing? To reiterate what Weena said earlier. Yeah?
If any of them are filled in.
If any of them are filled in, then what? Take a guess. That's right.
Go somewhere else.
Perfect. So that's all I'm doing. This is a quick and dirty example. And what I'm doing is if name is null, that is, if it's blank, if if gender is blank, or if dorm is blank, the implication to me, the sophomore writing this program, was, wait a minute, the user's messing around and didn't provide us all the required information. Let's just kick them back to the original form and make them try again. So as you note, exactly, if any of those conditions are true, if any of those fields were blank, what we're going to do is this command, which you'll see in the problem set, and will be explained more there, we want to send the user to the location explained by this URL. In other words, just bump them, send them back to that destination. And because actually I've copied this over to our CS50 stud account, I'm actually going to fix the URL so that this demo will actually work. And I'm going to go back just a little bit so that now, in fact, it's the URL of froshims.html. And let's see what happens. I've just saved this file. I'm going to go back to this web page and click register. And this is, you'll notice in the problem set spec, FAS maintains so many darn different machines, some of which have Intel processors, some of which have other processors. So you'll notice in some of our lecture examples, we say i386, because courses.fast is an Intel machine, but you guys on people.fast are using a DEC alpha, which is immaterial to you other than the fact that the top line needs to say alpha and not x86. And wait a minute, let's not have this happen again. Register. That's right. Now let's make sure I didn't goof again. That's right. htaccess. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you are registered. Well, not really. Well, not really, because I didn't do anything with that data. All I did was validate it or check it, but it at least demonstrates that I did do some checking. So let's actually go back for a moment. And actually, I should note why we got that message, because you in doing problem set 7 may encounter it. Also, because of FAS's setup, there's sometimes a bit of latency between when you hit save and say nano and when the web server actually realizes you said save. So if you do get weird errors like that after hitting refresh pretty quickly, just wait a moment like we just did, try again, and the changes should propagate. It's because the same hard drives are being shared among all these different computers. Essentially, it takes time, some seconds sometimes, for the data to propagate. So tuck that note away. Well, let's go back to this. I'm going to fill out the form again. After hit reload, and I'm going to forget about providing my name this time. I'm just going to go ahead and put gender, and this time Matthews, and click register. And notice I didn't get to the success page, because what just happened? Yeah, I didn't fill out all the fields, so I was redirected, as promised, back to this particular form. So know now that there are a whole bunch of ways that you could implement this same idea, and there are different approaches to designing PHP files. What you'll find in problem set 7 is that we tried to take as simple an approach and as clear an approach as possible, given that for almost all of you, this is a new language and new environment altogether. And so typically the approach we will take is that anytime we want to process information from a user, whether they're trying to log into a website or submit some information, the framework that we're going to preach is to do something similar to this. A PHP file, the top few lines of which contain PHP code, logic, and the bottom of which may or may not contain some amount of XHTML that you get to only if that request, that submission, was in fact successful. So what, in fact, are you going to be using these newfound skills for? Well, I rather spoiled the surprise the other day, but yes, it's true. For problem set 7, you're going to be implementing your own stock management portfolio tool, whereby by the end of problem set 7, you will have yourself a web-based piece of software with which you can register for an account. $10,000 virtual dollars will be automatically deposited into that account. It will then allow you to buy and sell stocks, but using real-world data that we're going to pull live from Yahoo and MSN's own website. So it very much will be an interactive tool. I thought I'd go ahead and demonstrate this here. This is my implementation of the project, and I too tried to keep it as simple as possible, right? There's no cute flashy details here, so that the idea is that you guys can, if you so choose, use this implementation as a model, like a staff solution to derive hints from. Well, I'm going to go ahead and, assuming it's all configured correctly, I click that register link. I'm going to go ahead and register Malin with a password of, not going to tell you, and another password there. Click register. And nice. I've just had my initial deposit created for me. So, as an aside, what just happened is clicking register submitted that form to a PHP file that I wrote. That PHP file did, in fact, register for me for real this time by inserting my name and my password into a database that we'll come back to in just a bit. So now it also, that PHP file gave me $10,000 virtual dollars to play with, and here I am at my CS50 Finance stock portfolio homepage. So let's take a look at this. I'm going to go ahead and click the link I called Get a Quote. All right, I need a symbol for a stock you'd like to get the quote from. What do you like? Goog. Okay, can't afford many shares of that, though, even with $10,000. But let's go ahead and type in its symbol. It's case insensitive, but I'll just type GOOG. If you don't know the stock symbols, this is what the real Google's for, or you can go to the real Yahoo or MSN Finance. Let's go ahead and click Get a Quote. What just happened is that little form, it's ridiculous. It was actually cheaper last night. It's delayed only by 15 minutes. What's that? Oh. Okay, so should have bought 15 minutes ago. So what just happened was that was just a little XHTML form, just like our fake Google form, just like our Frosh IAMS form. It had a text field. I typed in the symbol, hit submit. It got submitted to a PHP file I wrote, which, if you look closely at the URL, happens to be called quotes2.php. That's what I chose to call it. What my code then did was it made a request to Yahoo's website using a bit of trickery that we implemented, grabbed the current stock price from Yahoo Finance's website and returned it to my code in the form of a variable, which I then just spit out on the screen. In fact, where exactly is this data coming from? Well, just to be clear, if I Google Yahoo Finance, that's going to give me finance.yahoo.com. Here's Yahoo Finance. Let's go ahead and click Goog. Click Enter to get a quote, and we have 70277, so it's been updated even since. So Yahoo Finance is pretty good at keeping things quite current. In fact, I think if we sit on this page, they have a nice fancy system whereby that table will automatically update itself without loading. But the takeaway for now is that this is precisely the same data that we are pulling into CS50 Finance. It's real data, it's not faked, and as let's actually take a look now at my portfolio. So if I go back to my portfolio here, notice that I didn't buy the shares yet. I only got a quote. So let's go ahead and buy some Google shares. So I'm going to go ahead and click buy. I'm going to try to buy Goog. I'll just take a share. So buy. All right, it's doing the query to double check the price to make sure I have enough cash to handle that. And yeah, I just bought it for $703.13. This is how much cash I have left, and I've already lost 15 cents since I created this account. So we're not doing so well here. Let's just try to buy one other stock, perhaps. So about MFST MSFT for Microsoft. Let's buy one of those shares. See where that leaves us. So that's not going to make Steve and Larry so happy, right? When your biggest competitor is at $703 per share, one share of Microsoft goes for $33. Could have bought a lot of those. But we can go ahead and buy more of these shares if we want. We can sell them off. And now, just to incentivize you a bit more, you'll recall that Problem Set 5 had you playing around optionally with that big board. Well, we went ahead and implemented a bigger board, this time one in which you'll be able to compete against each other with virtual stock portfolios. So starting this coming Monday, you'll be able to use our implementation of CS50 Finance, the URL of which we'll put in this problem set spec as well as on the course's website. When you register for our version of CS50 Finance, we're going to add a few extra lines of code so that we can keep track of not only our net worth, but your net worth. And we will, every time you look at this page, be constantly reloading stock prices and the values of people's portfolios. And we'll see if by the very last lecture in this class, in just 2 weeks' time, we will see who's actually on top. Turns out that I'm doing pretty well and I'm winning right now. So $10,000, we'll see if you can push me back down to like number 16 or wherever I ended up on the last one. So everyone is welcome to do this. But to be clear, you'll be implementing your own versions of this stock portfolio tool. It's just the staff solution that you'll be interacting with if you want to play against the bigger board and your classmates. So without further ado, how would we even go about implementing something like a stock portfolio tool management system? All right, well, let's go ahead and do this. I'm going to open up that CS50 stud account again. All right, that's currently the home page, but let's begin whipping up the framework for this website, if only to demonstrate that, yeah, even if you've never done it before, you might not be able to do it off the top of your head, but you know, using some of these basic building blocks, asking some questions, looking back at some of the examples, and Googling around for more instruction over the next week or so, you'll see that you know, even implementing something as neat or as this doesn't take all that many lines of code. In fact, the comment that I want to preface the release of Problem Set 7 with today is that ultimately you won't have to write a huge amount of code for this problem set, PHP code at least. You'll be writing a bunch of XHTML, but frankly that's just because it's so darn verbose and you can copy and paste most of those things. But the amount of logic that you need to implement is not all that long, and I would liken it to Problem Set 4's whodunit problem, which some of you spent a good number of hours on thinking through and then were perhaps either incredibly excited or completely shattered by the fact that you only needed like 3 lines of code at the end of the day. Now this site's not going to be implemented in just 3 lines of code, but just realize that much of the process of putting together this website is going to be the thinking and the designing and the asking of questions and such, more than just implementing hundreds of lines of code. In fact, I probably implemented my own version in total a few dozen lines of PHP, but I had to think through exactly how to get the job done. So how do we begin getting the job done. Well, let's go ahead and try with CS50 Stud to whip something together. So the best way, perhaps, when learning this stuff to begin any page is, frankly, to copy and paste the page you already made. So I'm going to go ahead and take this hideous web page, index.html, and call it login.php. Okay. Notice now, or recall, that we'll need to have atop every file this particular line for PHP. So I'm just going to copy that too, because I never remember the path. I'm going to open up login.php, which again is just this hideous file we made the other day. And I'm going to paste at the top line the path to the interpreter, their so-called shebang line. All right, for the login page, I don't really need any logic, because all I need to display is that XHTML form. But I need to make sure that login.php is accessible on the web, right? Because by default, almost always when you create a file in an environment like this, it's, as you would hope, only readable by you. Well, that command, there's a command I think I ran the other day, which we will walk you through in the spec as well. Not that one, fix web files. This is just a little script that we in FASIT wrote to just very quickly automate the process of making everything accessible on the web that should be. So you don't have to remember that chmod command that I'm often writing, but more on that in the spec. So what I'm going to go ahead and do now is open up login.php again. Notice that it's still this hideous mess. And I'm going to go back to my browser, though, and pull up not index.html, but login.php. And notice that the effect is the same. Now, the effect is the same, but what just happened, to be clear? Well, because this is a PHP file, and because I have this shebang at the top of the file saying, interpret this file with PHP, what's really happening is that www.people.fast isn't just opening this file and dumping its contents to my browser like it would for a GIF, a JPEG, an HTML page, or the like, but rather it's saying, oh, wait a minute, this is a .php file. There's this shebang at the top which says, use this interpreter. So what people.fast is actually doing when I just pulled up that URL in IE is it's saying, okay, I'm going to open this file, login.php. I'm going to pass it to that program referenced in the very first line. I'm going to let that program do its thing, and then I, the web server, am only going to spit out the results that PHP's interpreter tells me to spit out. Well, as promised a moment ago, if you don't actually have any of these things in the PHP file, stuff just gets spit out raw. So this is why the effect is the same. This is a PHP file, but there's no PHP code in here just yet. But that's fine. We're going to leave the framework alone for now and focus only on getting this login working. So I'm going to go ahead and scroll down here, and I'm just going to butcher what's inside this page. And I'm going to do something really quick and really ugly. I'm just going to say the first thing I need is a username from the user so that they can log in. Actually, the first thing I'm going to say is that I need a form. I'm going to submit this form to a file we'll write in a second called login2.php. The method I'm going to use is post so that we don't leak the username and password in the URL. I'm going to next say that the username should go here. So a username is going to be a text field, so I'm going to call this the username field, the type of which is going to be text. And then I'm going to put a line break just to keep things slightly pretty. And then, and here's a great lesson in writing web pages, copy paste, rename that, and done. Okay, now I'm going to go back and reload. And now, still ugly and still yellow, but at least now we have this form. Unfortunately, we're missing what? Okay, we forgot the button. So let's put another line break here. And it turns out to put a submit button, you can do input type equals submit. And that has the effect of creating a button. Oh, see, we see that error again because I hit reload too fast. But now there's the button. Submit query is kind of lame. Well, you'll learn over time that there are various attributes for various tags. You can actually say a value for that button is login, reload now, another latency issue. And now we have a login button. Unfortunately, what's going to happen if I click login right now? Nothing, right? I don't have permission to open login2.php because it doesn't even exist just yet. And that's fine. We'll fix that in a moment. But here's one other problem first. So mail-in, and then that password I chose was what? Uh-oh, there, now everyone can see it. So how do we fix this? Well, turns out there's one other type of field we should mention, that type is not just text, but type equals password. This is how Facebook accomplishes the task of changing passwords to bubbles. So now it looks like that. Pretty simple, right? Let the computer do these things for you. So now I click log in, kind of a problem. There's nothing there to do. So now I'm going to go ahead and implement login 2, because now I need that program, the equivalent of what we called register.php before. We're going to call it login 2.php now, just to keep things straight as to what belongs with what. You know, I'm getting a little lazy here, so I'm going to copy login.php, and I'm going to call it login 2.php. I'm going to fix web files to make sure that that new file is also available on the web. And now I'm going to open login 2. .php. Now the purpose of this file is not going to be to display more HTML, but to process some logic. So I'm actually going to rip all this stuff out, because the only thing I really wanted was this line, so I don't have to remember it. But remember now that if you want to put logic, we need to put these things in there. All right. So now we have a PHP file, and if I want to get really lazy here, we can just do something lame like you just logged in, calling this print function, and let's just leave it at that. All right, and it's a little dark, but that just says print. So now I'm going to go ahead back to this form. I'm going to type Malin 12345, log in. Nice. So now I've logged in, and that has been dynamically generated. Granted, it's not XHTML, because if I view the source, it really cut some corners there, but at least it got the job done to prove that this is working, kind of. Well, let's be a little more clever. So if I really want to check that David logged in correctly, I need to do some conditional checking. So if request username equals equals Malin, and just like C, request password, and even though they look like bubbles, they don't get passed as bubbles, they get passed as the actual password, equals 12345, well, why don't we go ahead and do this? Print success, again, cutting corners, not even bothering with XHTML yet, else I'm going to print failure. Okay, so very similar in spirit to the register program. Let's go back. Malin's going to log in with 123 accidentally, log in, failure. All right, let's go back. Malin's going to log in now with 12345 and success. So now we've got some checking going on. Now this is all fine and good, but if you want to support thousands and millions of users hard coding all of their usernames and passwords in the PHP files, probably not such a wise idea. You know, maybe a switch might make things look prettier, but still not the best way to go. We want something more like a database. And even if you've never used a database, all of you have probably heard this term. Typical databases these days are what are called relational databases. That's just a fancy way of saying that a database is just a bunch of tables. Think Microsoft Excel. In Microsoft Excel, you can store lots of data in the form of columns and rows, and that is all, at the end of the day, what a relational database is. So what you're going to be using for problem set 7 is an incredibly popular database implementation called MySQL. And I believe to this day, this is what Facebook itself uses, albeit with many database servers and not just the one we'll be using. So you can interact with a MySQL database, and think of MySQL as just like the brand, like Microsoft Excel is the brand of a spreadsheet program. You can interact with MySQL at the command line on NICE and type fairly arcane commands, but a much nicer way of interacting with a database like this is via a GUI, right? A graphical environment that someone else wrote. Turns out that the people who wrote this program wrote it in PHP. Now, that's really just a coincidence. But what you'll see in problem set 7 is that we're going to equip each of you guys, all 283 of you, with your very own databases. So you're going to get your own username, your own password, and your own name for a database. And in that database, can you create any number of tables. So think of this as having a big Excel file, and you can create lots of those worksheets that to store data in. Well, when the problem set will direct you to this, and you don't have to understand most of the links in this software, but when you log in to this PHP MyAdmin tool with which you can configure your database, you'll see the name of your database at top left, and mine happens to be called CS50 Stud at the moment. I'm going to go ahead and click that link, and you'll notice in the page that appears, once prompted for a password, which I can never remember, so I've just insecurely showed it to all of you. I'm going to click go and log back in. Notice that no tables found in database. So this is like having a blank Excel file. Well, let's go about making a database. If I want to retain ultimately information on users, how many fields, how many columns do I want my database to have most likely? So at least two, right? I mean, the goal is just to get rid of this non-scalable approach of hard coding in every username password pair. So let's just treat this like an Excel database and say that the name of this table will be users and the number of fields is going to be two. I'm going to click go with this tool. And now it's a little scary looking at first, but now I just have a nice form with which I can create or define the columns in this table. And this will become more clear when you spend some time looking at it. But for now, all I'm going to do is say that one of these fields is going to be called username. The other field is going to be called password. Turns out you can declare data types for the cells in a database. Varchar means a string, essentially. And I'm going to specify that the maximum length for a username is arbitrarily going to be 255, and the maximum length for a password is arbitrarily going to be 255. And the only other things I'm going to note are as follows. I want my database to make sure that no username and no password can be null. So just by leaving these boxes alone, the database will ensure that no one can try registering with a non-username or an empty password. But I also need to do one other thing, which is a canonical feature of most any database system. I want to specify that there is a key for this database. Right? At the end of the day, the point of a database usually is to look up information. And you look up information via some key, much like you looked up words in your hash table via the word themselves. So do we want to look up things in this database via, say, username. So I'm going to specify that the primary key for this database is going to be the username field. In other words, I want the database to do whatever magic it's capable of to optimize searches based on username. And you do this by specifying that username not only can't be null, but it also must be a primary key, which means no one else may have the same username as me. A primary key means that that field has to be unique for every entry in the database, for every row in the spreadsheet. And that's a useful thing so that no two mailings can exist in the portfolio tool. After that, I'm going to go ahead and just click Save. And that's it. So what this did was execute a fairly arcane SQL command that looks like this, but it created, in short, the database for me. Now, the nice thing, too, about this tool is that I can manually insert data. Granted, your portfolio tool is not going to involve you sitting at a computer manually registering all of your new users. You're going to automate that process. But for now, for demonstration purposes, this program, phpMyAdmin, lets me insert data manually. So you know what? I'm going to go ahead myself and manually register Malin with password 12345. By clicking go, does this tool just insert a row into that database, a row into that spreadsheet? Done. So now I have in my database, if I browse it with this other link, just this data. So Malin has password 12345. And if I want to go ahead and insert one other person, for instance, say Thomas, we'll give him a password of 9876. Click go. And now if I go to my browser again, notice that now there's two rows in this database, two rows in this spreadsheet, two users in the database. All right, now let's go back to this and rip out some of this code, because now we're hard coding these checks. Well, it turns out, and the spec will provide you with this code, you can do the following now. So I'm going to actually open up a newer, different version of this login file that I prepared in advance. And this one is still going to be called login 2. I'm just going to rename it over so that it's good to go. And in this version now of login 2, looks a little scarier first, but notice just a few lines of code, all of which will be commented in the problem set itself. If I now want to connect to a database, I need to tell PHP what the name of the database is, what username to use to connect to it, and what password to use to connect to it. Not Malin's username password, but the webmaster's username and password who owns this database. So it turns out that in PHP, all I have to do is specify a line like this. And I figured this out by looking at the documentation the first time I ever had to do it. The database you guys will likely be using is called mysql.cs50.org. That's just the address on the internet we gave it. This is a port number, which is just a unique number that identifies our instance of MySQL. Here's the username to connect to. And here's that crazy looking password that I'll change later today. It wraps onto two lines, but that's fine. And then once you've connected to a database, you generally need to select a specific set of tables. So here I'm selecting CS50 studs set of tables so that if other students are using the same database server, I'm not using their tables but my own. And now, and there's a few lines of code here that I'll gloss over for a moment, I'm going to do the following. This is now our first instance of real SQL. So SQL is just this language for a structured query language. It's a language that allows you to request information from a database, insert information into a database, delete information from a database, in short, interact with a database. And you can do some crazy things with it, but you can also very easily do some simple things. And among the simplest is just to select some information. And I want to select, in this context, a username and password to make sure that they're equivalent to what that person typed in. So the SQL statement or query that I want to execute now is this, actually. Select, I'm going to change it slightly. So I'm going to prepare a statement. Here, so here's a variable arbitrarily called SQL. SPrintf should be vaguely familiar to you from C. I'm using it because it makes the process of creating this string a little easier. And then the SQL query I'm going to execute is select username from users, where username equals %s and password equals %s. But if you recall how SPrintf works, these next two statements mean insert those values into that string. So where are these values coming from? Well, even though I was using a $request before, turns out in PHP you can be more specific. If you know a priori that the data is coming in via post, you can actually use $_post to get at that data. Or if you know it's coming in via get, like Google, you can access it via get. And which is better is besides the point for now, but request just happens to automatically figure out, which we used before, if the variable's in get or post. So here I'm being more specific, just for maybe security purposes. I only want to take data from post. And incidentally, for the curious, and the spec will make mention of this, rather than just query the database using the raw username and password that the user typed in, I actually want to do something called escaping that string. Now, why is this? Well, you might not have read of this, but some of you might have a SQL injection attack. Right? One of the underlying themes of this course has been security, or at least don't write bugs because it leads to bad security. And it turns out that if a user really is trying to mess with you and doesn't type in Malin as their username, but types a SQL statement into a form like delete table, you don't want to just accidentally pass that information to Facebook's database and then delete the entire table of users. So the means by which you prevent against those kinds of SQL injection attacks is that you escape the data before you pass it to the database via a query. So the function to do that is just this very verbose but useful function called MySQL real escape string, which just makes sure that there's no dangerous information in the variable the user has provided by submitting that form. So long story short, now that I have in this string, in this variable rather, that SQL command, I'm going to go ahead and execute that query with code like this. That's going to return back what's called a result set, a bunch of rows, one or zero or more rows. And if I want to get the first such row, I'm going to use this function called MySQL fetch array. And what this is going to do is it's going to grab the first row, if any, that was returned. Now, the nice thing is, in this context, if there was a row returned from the database, what does that mean about the user's attempt to log in? It was successful, right? Because if we selected the username and password from the database, given what the user typed in, and no values came back, the implication is that the guy's not in the database, at least not with that username and password, and so row will be null. But if row is non-null, that is true, notice that I'm going to redirect the user to index.php, where his portfolio presumably awaits. Else, if row is null, something went wrong, and where am I going to redirect this user to? login.php. So in problem set 7, we're actually going to give you most of the code for authentication. Login 1, login.php, login 2.php, and logout.php. But among the pieces you'll need to build are the following. Recall from our demonstration of CS50 Finance that ideally there's got to be a way for a user to register for a new account, because you don't want to have to be manning the phones to adding new users to your database every time someone wants to join. 2, you're going to need this feature to get a quote. And the code for that, frankly, if you're a little nervous about this, requires writing one line of PHP, I think, because we wrote the function called lookup that will go query Yahoo and return the data to you. But the other two pieces of functionality, buying and selling, are a little more interesting, a little more fun, but even still, maybe 12 lines of code each, just 12 lines of PHP code, 20 lines, just to put it into perspective. And so you'll need ultimately to implement at least those functions. The spec will go out later today or tomorrow. We will see you on Monday, and good luck on the bigger board.